I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State is building up an army of tax collectors, and there's only one possible reason why. Plus, do we have a duty to defy unconstitutional laws? And former Governor Jay Inslee, the king of high gas prices, suddenly wants to complain about high gas prices. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We're close to tax day, so I thought I would make you even more depressed about the sad, sad reality of taxation by talking about the fact that in Washington State, currently, the government is building up an army of tax collectors. Now, they claim the army of tax collectors is to implement in a couple years their new unconstitutional income tax on millionaires. But as you'll see, the number of people they're hiring to tax approximately 16,000 households doesn't add up. So this is the headline from the Seattle Times. WA will hire 300 employees as it enacts high earners income tax. Does that sound right to you? 300 employees additional to the tax collectors, the Department of Revenue, the employees the state already has to collect a variety of taxes. Does that seem commensurate to you? 300 new employees to, in a couple years, implement an income tax on approximately 16,000 households? No. It's way too many people. Now, even though they love big government and hiring people for really no reason except growing the size of government, I think a lot of people understand that that sounds a lot more like the size of enforcement arm that you would need if you were, I don't know, going to implement an income tax on the entire population. And again, I've said that a million times. I mean, there's ad nauseum. That the income tax on millionaires is just about eventually doing what they've always wanted to do, Democrats in Washington State, and what they had no problem saying for the past few decades they wanted to do, pass an income tax, reform our state's broken tax system, right? And you can choose like, oh, Brandy's right wing. I'm not going to listen to her. She just loves rich people, whatever it is. That's fine. There is now a second state Democrat who is acknowledging that that is probably the plan. Senator Adrian Cortez, who's a Democrat, one of the few Democrats in the state Senate who voted against the income tax on millionaires, he was at a town hall over the weekend, and he was asked about why he voted against the income tax. And he said one of the reasons is he's pretty sure that it's going to turn, or at least there's no protections against it turning into an income tax on everyone.
Anytime you put such a big issue like an income tax in place, I believe voters do need to have a voice at the table that's above and beyond just their elected representatives, right? And so I'm really hoping that we do see that at the ballot box, whether it's this year or next year. I do still have some serious concerns that tax could ultimately come down to working class families. What's going to protect it from a future legislative session, maybe 5-10 years down the road, from saying, okay, now instead of a million, it's gonna be 750,000, or it's gonna be 500,000, or it's gonna be 200,000, or now it's gonna be 100,000. You know, or let's just do what Oregon's doing and have it on everybody, right? I would really like to see some guardrails around that.
He says there's no guardrails. That's one of the reasons he voted against it. One, something that substantial. He says the voters ought to weigh in on it. I agree. They ought to weigh in on it in the form of a constitutional amendment, which is the only possible way a tax like this would be legal. But then he also says, one of the reasons I voted against it, despite the fact my party wanted me to support it, is it's very clear that this could pave the way for an income tax on everyone. And when you look at the number of bureaucrats and tax collectors that the state of Washington is hiring as we speak, it's undeniable. They don't need 300 tax collectors to collect a new tax on 16,000 households, and it's probably going to be more like 9,000 households because I think that many millionaires will have fled the state by the time this thing is implemented. And again, he's the second Democrat to just come out and admit it. Remember, we had that clip from Rep. Larry Springer where he was at a town hall, I think it was back in December, and he was asked blatantly, like, how can you promise us this won't become an income tax on everyone?
Why should the public, you know, while it's millionaires now, why should we believe Democrats? Why should the public assume that it's not going to be an income tax on them by 2031?
You shouldn't.
You shouldn't. And he voted for it. So he said you shouldn't believe it. He voted for it, which makes me think that he wants it to become an income tax on everyone by 2030. It's not rocket science. And as for the details of this hiring, now the state says not all of the 300 employees are specifically going to be designated to go out and collect this 9.9% income tax from millionaires. Some of them are to implement other aspects of the tax policy that was passed alongside of it. From the Seattle Times, a majority of the new employees, about 131, are, quote, directly tied to administering the new tax, while about 106 will support the expansion of the working families tax credit, which was like the trade-off here. Employee wages alone, this is crazy. Employee wages alone for the new positions are estimated to total approximately $45 million by the 2029-2031 biennium. But the total cost to the revenue department when the tax takes effect, so this is the total cost, new jobs, implementation, $557 million for 2 years. Every 2 years, they're going to spend $500 million going out to chase down money from millionaires, including salaries, benefits, and office equipment. 557, and then there's a bunch of that that's going to be for the working family tax credit subsidies. So there is really nothing left that could, if you haven't been convinced by now. And look, if you're all like, tax the rich, yay, fine. That's an ideology I don't understand. It doesn't make sense. It never works to target out rich people for taxation. But if that is your belief, you have to ask yourself, okay, let's say you support that iteration of the law. Would you be okay if they use that to come and tax your income? If you do not want an income tax in Washington state, when this gets to the ballot, you have to vote against it. You have to vote against it, even though right now it's a tax on the income of people making over $1 million a year. Because it will absolutely be a tax on your income in a matter of 3 to 5 years. Democrats acknowledge it. They're building the tax structure that tells us that's the case. And if you don't want to, I mean, how nice is it to be able to live in a state where we only file a federal tax, income tax return? And so all of this is going to mean something for families that make far less than $1 million a year. And I am actually a lot of credit to Senator Adrian Cortez for standing in front of Democrats at a town hall and saying what is true, that there's no guardrails to prevent this from being an income tax on everyone. All right, speaking of unconstitutional laws, I wanted to have a conversation with you guys today about something that kind of popped into my mind over the weekend. I was speaking to a group down in Chehalis, just about a variety of things, all the things going wrong in the state of Washington and some of the unconstitutional, against the state constitution and the federal constitution, laws that our state lawmakers, Democrats, passed into law in direct violation of their oath of office. They have a duty to uphold the Constitution, the state and federal constitution. This is something that former Attorney General Rob McKenna said last week when they announced a lawsuit against the income tax, that every single one of the lawmakers and Governor Ferguson, who voted in favor of the income tax structured this way, and Ferguson, who signed it into law, as they did it, violated their oath of office. And I was talking about that, and I think something just sort of came to me about what is our duty, right? What is our individual duty when it comes to defying unconstitutional laws, declarations, actions from the government? I mean, because that is the document by which we get to continue to have this wonderful country of ours that is the freest on the planet. And so when you have people who you sent to make decisions on your behalf, to take votes on your behalf, and they do things that are fly in the face of the Constitution, what do we do about it? You know, I thought about this. I've thought about this a lot with businesses, for instance, and, you know, just the collection of tax money by a government that has no issue violating the Constitution. And I thought maybe we could do some sort of, you know, mass thing where none of us, you know, to the extent possible, we pay businesses in cash so they can just avoid, again, to the extent possible, paying higher B&O taxes to the government, things like that. What are little ways that we can push back against unconstitutional actions by the government? And then what are big ways? You know, I think that we're racing toward a really heated moment when it comes to the law that was passed that would allow duly elected sheriffs to be removed by an unelected board of bureaucrats, completely throwing out the will of voters. I think the first time they tried to do that, I don't know if it's going to turn into a violent confrontation, but it's something I definitely worry about. Another law that we talked about during this session that's blatantly unconstitutional, I think it violates the First, the Second, and the Fourth Amendments to the United States Constitution. Remember the bill on 3D printed guns? So there was actually two. There was one bill that governed actual 3D printers, wherein the manufacturers of those printers have to like install a kill switch in case it detects that you're trying to print the components of a 3D printed gun. Insane. And then the other one, House Bill 2320, has to do with actual possession of 3D printed guns, manufacturing of 3D printed guns, and the possession of digital codes that show you how to print a 3D printed gun that you can actually put into action in your 3D printer. And I read at the time some really concerning passages from this bill. Now, some of the concerning passages that I noted, I think back in February, were ultimately removed from the bill before final passage, but it still says this: no person may possess digital firearm manufacturing code for a firearm with an intent to distribute the code unless the person receiving the code is, you know, a cop, basically. Says no person may possess digital firearm manufacturing code for a firearm with an intent to manufacture a firearm using a three-dimensional printer. And it's very clearly against the First Amendment, right? Where you can't even possess the digital code that would explain and tell your 3D printer how to manufacture a 3D printed firearm. And when I first heard about this, and we first talked about it on the show, one of the initial things that came to my mind was the Anarchist Cookbook. So you guys will probably be familiar, especially if you were around during the Vietnam War, with the Anarchist Cookbook. I had to blur some pages from it because I'm not going to disseminate instructions on how to create a pipe bomb or a Molotov cocktail or whatever it is. But this was made by a guy, William Powell, during the Vietnam War, and it was essentially a book that contains all these instructions for making explosive devices. I mean, all sorts of crazy stuff. There's even a depiction in there on how to retrofit a submachine gun with a silencer. And so this is about violent rebellion against the government. I mean, all number of things in here. There's also, again, I had to blur it out, but there's some pages in there that have to do with creating pressure bombs, a dart with a rapid release so you could poison and kill someone from a distance. And these are detailed instructions in the Anarchist Cookbook how to manufacture things that are illegal, that could kill large numbers of people. Bombs, you know, pressure plates, pipe bombs, poison darts with a rapid release function. But today in the state of Washington, I could possess the Anarchist Cookbook. And even back during the Vietnam War, when this was released, the FBI was concerned about it, but basically said, we can't regulate its dissemination because that would be against the First Amendment to the Constitution. And so I was at this event over the weekend and I was talking about, again, listing sort of the blatantly unconstitutional laws that have been passed by the legislative body in Washington state in just the last year. And I thought, what is a way that we can rebel and defy unconstitutional laws, even when they don't necessarily impact us? Because I believe we have a duty to do so. And I'm not saying defiance means violence. I'm a very nonviolent person. If there's anything I have been morally consistent on, it's speaking out against political violence in all forms and fashions. But is there a way where you can render an unconstitutional law essentially impossible to enforce? And I called upon Attorney General Nick Brown. This event was on camera. I know there was news media there over the weekend. I called on him to arrest me. And what I said is, you know, I'm in possession of the digital codes to print a 3D printed gun. And is it as simple as just saying that? And today I was like, well, let's do it for real, right? So I've got two external memory drives. This one here contains codes to print components of a 3D printed gun. Which, and what is my intent with it? Do I intend to actually print the gun? Do I intend to give this to someone who would print the gun in violation of state law? It's none of the government's business. So I have in my possession something that is against the law in the state of Washington, what I deem to be an unconstitutional law. I also have on this external hard drive the digital versions of the instructions that are printed in the Anarchist Cookbook. How to make a pipe bomb. It's just the pages. It's the digital pages from the Anarchist Cookbook. How to make a pipe bomb. What was the other one? How to put a silencer, retrofit a submachine gun with a silencer. The correct algorithm for creating a Molotov cocktails. It's just the pictures from the Anarchist Cookbook. Right here. They're in my little thing. Okay? In my studio. So the question is, what would the government do about it? What would the government do about it if every single one of us did the same thing and said publicly that you have the digital codes to print a 3D printed gun? And the reason I say I have both of them is that under Washington law, isn't it kind of crazy that only one of those things would be illegal and the other one's perfectly fine? But the Anarchist Cookbook, I would argue, has instructions, detailed instructions to create far more deadly weapons to carry out violence of all kinds than a 3D printed gun, which isn't even very reliable. But it's only the codes and the instructions for the 3D printed gun that are unlawful. Now, I would argue both of them are protected by the First Amendment, very clearly. So if Attorney General Nick Brown wants to send, I don't know, the State Patrol to our studio, would they take both of those or would they just take one? By law, I guess they'd only take one, right? They'd take the one that has the instructions for the 3D printed firearms. And it just shows you the hypocrisy of it, the stupidity of it, that I could legally, on the bookshelf behind me, have a copy of a book that, and I think you should be able to, that shows you all these things that you can build to hurt people and kill people. But I can't on my computer, even if I really have no intent to make one, that I could have the instructions to a 3D printed gun or even just components, even just small individual components of a 3D printed gun. And that is now a crime in the state of Washington. So when we talk about defying unconstitutional laws, could it be that there's ways with a lot of these laws that we've passed that we simply make it impossible for them to implement the laws and make arrests and prosecute because so many of us violate the law? If every single one of you today proclaimed publicly that you have the digital files for a 3D printed gun, what is the state of Washington going to do about it? Are they going to be able to come to tens of thousands of doors? Are they going to come to my studio? And are they going to take that external hard drive and use it to prosecute me? Because again, it's not their business what I intend to do with it. Just no more than it would be their business if I had a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook on the shelf behind me. Couldn't do anything about that. So I think we have to start to think about creative ways to defy a government that is pushing unconstitutional laws. And for me, that's what I'm going to do. I dare Attorney General Nick Brown to come to my studio and serve a search warrant for the files that show me how to print a 3D printed gun. Will he take me up on that? I don't know. But I think every single one of you today should say something similar. Declare it publicly. Because there's no way they can arrest every single one of us. All right, coming up next, the homeless crisis in Seattle continues to be a significant problem for the citizens of the Chinatown International District. Unreal, some of the video down there of what's going on. We'll discuss, and gas prices. First, if you are thinking about moving out of the state because you too don't like the unconstitutional laws that are being passed, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. So many great reviews of Wes and his team. This one is from Kyle. 5 stars. We had a great experience selling our house with Wes and team. Great communication. All the resources. Tough negotiator, valuable advisor. He made our house shine and helped us get a tough property sold. Would 100% do business with him again. And that's just, I think for so many Undivided viewers and listeners who use Wes to sell their home, it's one of the biggest points of feedback that we get sent to us is he makes you feel like you are his only client in that moment. And getting your house sold is the only thing he has to do, is the most important thing he has to do. And I just love hearing that. So go to sellwithwes.com. Go to from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes. You can peruse some of the recent listings he and his team have been able to sell for their clients, get an idea of what he's been able to accomplish. But I think the most valuable thing you can get from Wes, even if you're just at the early stages of thinking about selling your home, is a free market analysis where he's just going to give it to you straight. He's going to tell you what's going on in the market, how long you can expect it to take to sell your home, how many listings you're competing with, all of those things. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, the clock is ticking for the city of Seattle to figure out what it's going to do before the eyes of the world are on the city for the World Cup. And I've said they'll probably do, and it seems like Katie Wilson has been trying to do what previous mayors have done. And what is that? They just go in there and they sweep the homeless away for a short period of time, go in and clean up areas of the city, and put on a false front for visitors. And I think that's probably what they're going to do for the World Cup. And what other option do they have? This is a 15-year homelessness emergency that gets worse by the year. If they haven't fixed it by now, they're not going to like fix it before the World Cup. So I guess really the only option is just to hide it. And so, you know, there's obviously a downside to doing it that way, is they declare this temporary victory. The world doesn't get to see necessarily the real Seattle. And then we just go back to having a homeless crisis and it gets even worse because these people haven't been helped. They've been shoved into a tiny house. They've been shoved into an affordable apartment or a temporary shelter situation. And they just continue to do drugs and continue to live even in those places in filth and squalor. Our friends, Jonathan Cho and Andrea Suarez, they've been out actually talking to some of these homeless people, talking to people who are drug addicted, who've had interactions with the city, you know, who know what options are available to them. Jonathan Cho, for instance, was down in the Chinatown International District.
Chinatown ID in Seattle is a human dumping ground. New drug encampment forming at 10th and Weller. And you talk to a lot of the people out here,
I mean,
they'll say
that.
This is a Great. Drug crisis, not just a lack of affordable housing.
But everyone's getting swept right now.
Yeah, you swept us in from the Space Needle, too, just a couple days ago. All my friends over there.
What do you think about Mayor Katie Wilson? Is she doing a good job? You think she's doing a good job dealing with the homeless crisis out here?
No.
Why?
Look at us now. I mean, we're all still out here, you know.
What's causing all this? Drugs?
Yeah, maybe.
Drugs? Yeah. The mayor keeps on saying it's a housing issue. It's just a housing issue. If you build more housing, this will be solved.
No. Then they'll take it to their house. They'll take their drugs to their house.
If you just build housing.
Yeah.
See, they
Not
totally
only
know.
Do you need housing, you need treatment, recovery. Yeah. Everyone's just getting swept. It's like whack-a-mole.
Yeah, like whack-a-mole.
Right.
Yeah, and that's... let me be the first to say, Madam Mayor, that's not your fault. I mean, it is now your responsibility. You asked for this job. You knew you would be inheriting a decades-old homelessness crisis at a time when we're going to have more eyes on our city than ever before. You asked for that very difficult job. You now have that very difficult job. And your solution is to do exactly what the failed mayors before you did? That's not a solution. I mean, Andrea talked to, this is the second time Andrea's been out actually hearing from people, because what is Mayor Wilson's number one plan? Oh, I'm going to build 1,000 tiny houses, which doesn't even come close to dealing with the crisis that we're in. But as Andrea has pointed out, they just go into these tiny houses and they either do drugs in there or they just lay their head down there and they're still out on the streets doing drugs.
Back here with Leo.
Look at this guy.
Leo, who has housing.
Yes, I do. It's great.
And we're down here at Lewis Park hanging out.
Yes, we are. Beautiful place, eh?
Doing drugs. Have housing.
Hugo.
so sad.
I stopped in my tracks to see your face.
Oh my gosh.
What happened?
Yeah, what happened even, you know, but it's good. To check what you burn, you know?
The butane torch get the best of you?
Mm-hmm.
We've got people down here who have tiny houses, who have family houses up the road, and but this is where we hang out.
Yes, it
is. In community.
Beautiful place.
All of the people are back here, but without their stuff, without their tent. Right. And even if we put a tent around this, Vlad just told me people will cut it down.
Yes, they will.
So we need a totally different plan here.
Yes.
Law enforcement, intervention, stiffer penalties for probably open air drug use in our parks.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reality.
Yeah.
You wouldn't use drugs in our park if you were going to see 6 months in jail, would you?
No, I would not.
So there you go, Councilman Lynn and the rest of the council. Leo's telling you right here, if he were to go to jail for 6 months for being caught using fentanyl in our park, he would not do it.
No.
What else do you have to hear? And then what do they, how they respond to videos like that from Jonathan and Andrea, like, oh, right wing, don't listen to them, they're conservative or whatever. And I don't think Andrea is really conservative. And then you have the homeless people straight from their mouth. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Every formerly drug addicted person we've had on this show, every former addict, the single common thread that caused them to turn their life around was they went to jail. Every time. There's no exception to that. In all the years I was covering homelessness and crime in Seattle, I interviewed so many people out on the streets who'd just been like resuscitated with Narcan. And the single common thread that ended up changing their trajectory in life was jail. There is nothing else. They're not going to all of a sudden come up with the will after years living in filth and squalor on the streets and in parks and in encampments. They're not all of a sudden going to wake up one day and you say, you know what? I'm done with the Fetty. No, their minds are poisoned. They don't have the capability of doing that. What they need is to sober up by force and go through those really difficult withdrawals so they can have a clear mind and they can make a decision on how to move forward with their life. But that's something a socialist mayor will never be able to do. Her base won't allow her to do that. Just like Bruce Harrell's base wouldn't allow him to do that. Just like Jenny Durkin's base wouldn't allow her to do that. And those were mayors that were far more moderate than the mayor that we're dealing with now. And so, no, they're not going to be able to do anything meaningful except maybe hide them temporarily during the World Cup. And they don't want to listen to the people like Andrea and Jonathan who are down there every day illustrating, showing on camera, undeniable evidence, talking to people about what the problem really is, which is drugs. It's absolutely not housing. All right. Former Governor Jay Inslee, will you go away? Should I start ignoring him? But sometimes it's just too good of content because we get to point out the moral hypocrisy. So first of all, I always want to make sure to just be morally consistent. Gas prices are atrocious right now. Absolutely atrocious. And it is, by and large, because of the war in Iran, at least what's happening across the country. I mean, for the national average across the country today to be $4.12, that's very high. That is very high. And of course, they're even higher in Washington, $5.40, although I'm sure, like you, the cost is higher at a lot of stations in the western on the western side of the state. I think it's like closer to $6 a gallon around me. Our situation, as I've said, is a little bit different because we are always going to be higher than the rest of the country because our taxes are so high on gas, all the other fees that are built in, and then, of course, the Climate Commitment Act. Governor Jay Inslee's baby, that he lied and lied and lied for multiple years, said, no, taxing carbon emissions won't increase gas prices, when his own staff admitted that was the point of it, was to increase gas prices. So forgive me when I just laugh at him talking about how bad gas prices are under President Trump because of what's happening in Iran. He put out a couple posts about this. Now Trump blockades the strait. This calls for a reboot. Make gas prices greater again. Ah, ha, 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 ha. He also, does he think that's, was it a joke? I don't get it. Is he trying to be, is it a quip? What is it? He's not funny. He's just weird and low IQ. He said, it's high time to break out of the straitjacket of the Straits of Hormuz by moving toward renewables. First, Iran blockades it. Now, Trump, nobody blockades the sun or the wind or our batteries. First of all, yes, there's a little something called a cloud that often blockades the sun in Washington state. So And also we know that his obsession with green energy, also he could build a presidential campaign platform and get 1% of the vote by being the climate candidate. His obsession with that is doing what in Washington state as we speak? It's driving up energy costs for families, and we are careening toward an impossible goal to reach that he set through his Clean Energy Transformation Act that we can't even achieve because we need a third of the landmass of Washington state to be solar and wind, and then we'd also need some offshore wind farms. And it's leading to less reliable, more expensive energy. So he's saying that if the world transitions away from oil, that it'll bring energy prices down. That's weird because the example in the state you led for 12 years shows us exactly the opposite of that. We talked about it at length next week. Puget Sound Energy saying they're going to jack up energy rates because they've got to try to build up more infrastructure to meet these artificial goals that former Governor Jay Inslee put into place. Senator Patty Murray, United States Senator Patty Murray of Washington, also jumping on the bandwagon, although she said literally nothing when the Climate Commitment Act jacked up gas prices 50 cents a gallon. She said families in Seattle and Spokane didn't vote for Trump's war of choice, but they're the ones paying for it every time they fill up their tank, and Republicans are blocking Democrats from putting an end to this war for good. Now, here is the problem, is that there's probably not a worse thing for a president during a midterm than to have high gas prices, because it impacts like every single person and everyone hates it and it really sucks. And President Trump came out and he just said blatantly, and I appreciate the honesty, frankly, that gas prices are probably going to suck right up to the midterms.
So do you believe the price of oil and gas will be lower before the midterm elections?
I hope so. I mean, I think so. It could be. It could be or the same or maybe a little bit higher, but it should be around the same. I think this won't be that much longer.
Yeah, so could be even higher. And now I look at that and I, one, appreciate the honesty, because it's honesty we didn't get from Jay Inslee. Now, I knew that everybody with a brain knew that the Climate Commitment Act would raise gas prices, but he lied about it and lied about it and lied about it until he couldn't lie about it anymore because it went into place and gas prices immediately went up. And I said at the time, you can go back and check the tapes. I said, if he were honest about it and said, yeah, this is going to increase the cost of gas, but I believe that it's worth the trade-off. I still would have disagreed with the policy, but I would have approached my coverage of then Governor Jay Inslee a little bit different because he was being honest about what the implications for regular people would be. So I feel like this is a much different scenario. The president is saying he believes what he's doing in Iran is worth the trade-off, not only in the trade-off for how it impacts everyday Americans, but clearly he thinks it is important enough to lose the midterms over. Because the last thing any president wants is to have gas prices soar during the midterms. So he believes, and I think that's because he's looking at the long game. I think that's because he really loves our country and he wants to bring an end to what's happening in the Middle East, even if he doesn't get credit for it for 5 to 10 years or 20 years from now when he's no longer on the planet. And so although gas prices are still annoying, I can appreciate more when they're honest about it and say, I think it's worth the trade-off and I'm going to take the electoral consequences for it. So we'll see how much longer Republicans stay in his corner about that. Again, there's not a lot of families that can absorb $7 a gallon gasoline, $8 a gallon gasoline, or Lord only knows when it's going to be. But I'll tell you, Democrats, for all the trade-offs, it doesn't compute for me. I'd rather, instead of having an open border, I'd rather pay $20 a gallon for gasoline, to be frank. All right, coming up next, my friend Savannah Hernandez attacked in Minnesota while covering an anti-ICE action. Could this be the beginning of a different approach to prosecuting attacks on conservative journalists and, frankly, any journalist? We'll discuss. First, our friends at First Mark Insurance, I talked to them a lot over the weekend because I'm going through some new coverage options for our home and some changes in our life. And they emailed me and said, hey, you know, about renewal time, we just wanted to tell you. They actually saved me and Mike, without me even talking to First Mark, $3,000 a year on all of our coverage, because they were listing out our coverage in the email and they said, hey, good news, we checked with a different company and we're saving $3,000 a year and we didn't have to do anything. Isn't that wonderful? And it's one of the reasons I love First Mark Insurance. They're always looking for ways to improve your coverage, to make sure that it's costing your family as little as possible. They also have done that with my business insurance. I've got this weird insurance I need for the podcast in case somebody like sues me for lying about them. And that went down $3,000 too. I was like, oh my God, I'm saving $6,000 total this year between my personal insurance and my business insurance, all because First Mark Insurance is proactively looking at these things. So I highly recommend taking the First Mark Challenge because you really don't have anything to lose. Go to them, they'll look over your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, go out, shop the market, come back with their recommendations, and they might say, you know what, we can't save you any money, and turn away your business. And then you're like, well, that's an honest company, I love them. Or they'll say, hey, great news, we can save you a bunch of money if you want to move everything over to First Mark. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, especially if you're looking for places to cut, you know, pinch pennies because of the gas prices. I think looking at your insurance is a really good way to go about it. All right. One of the people who was on the Antifa roundtable with me at the White House was Savannah Hernandez. She's an independent journalist. She does reporting for Turning Point USA. She has been, you know, attacked in the field before, but what happened to her in Minneapolis over the weekend is absolutely unacceptable. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Boop. Okay. So as you know, there was a nationwide day of action against ICE. There was stuff happening in Seattle, in Portland, in Minneapolis. Savannah Hernandez, who, you know, people call Sav for short, she was outside the Whipple Building at Fort Snelling in Minnesota. And she explained on social media that, you know, she knows by now that these anti-ICE agitators are very dangerous. And her thing in the field is she likes to go out and interview people. And she said she made a conscious decision on Saturday not to do that because she didn't want to aggravate them any further than they were already aggravated. So she's just standing there. She's just standing there recording some of the activities that are happening, but it doesn't stop them from attacking her. Here's the video. Crazy. Oh my gosh. This is from Sav's camera, her perspective.
Stop touching me!
And watch this guy, he's gonna come shove her to the ground.
Leave me, I'm trying to leave!
No, just go though. We're trying to help you.
Look at that.
Trying to leave, let's go! Let's get you out of here.
I cannot tell you how mad that made me over the weekend. Specifically, that like 300-pound guy. I mean, Savannah's like 5'2", maybe 5'3". For a man to push her as forcefully as he did to the ground. I said on social media over the weekend, I have never wanted to see someone's life ruined as badly as I want to see that man's life ruined. And you think if he can treat a 5'2" girl like that, that he hasn't abused anyone else in his lifetime, the amount of anger on his face, and they were hitting her with dildos. Apparently this was a thing, somebody funding this shipped out these dildos to all these anti-ICE groups all across the country so they could throw them at ICE agents. They were hitting Savannah in the face with them. I mean, absolutely deranged, disgusting stuff. And one of the things that came out is that the three individuals who were, and we have some video of this from a different angle, the three individuals who were harassing her the most are all from the same family. And you see right there, that girl who obviously winds up and punches her multiple times. And then that woman right there in the hat, the heavier set woman right there. And then the man who eventually comes up and right there, shoves her to the ground. Wow. I'd like to punch that guy right in the throat. They're all from the same family. They are all members. Oh my gosh. I cannot even tell you the rage that builds up inside of me when I see any journalist treated like that. But it always happens to be the conservative journalist. And as you know, I've gone through this many times. And what she experienced there at the end, where she's saying, I'm trying to leave. And she's clearly trying to walk away. She's trying to pull herself out of that situation. The exact same thing happened to me in 2020 at Chaz Chop the night it was formed. You'll remember the video. We're trying to get our crew out of there. They follow us for a half hour, even though we're trying to leave, until we had to seek refuge in a fire station. Last June, when I was outside the ICE facility in Tukwila, when they were trying to blind me with wasp killer as I'm walking away, I'm trying to leave. I don't want to be assaulted. I don't want a confrontation. And they don't care. They're deranged. And all three of them, mom, dad, daughter, from the same family. Can you imagine that home environment? In fact, their other daughter has spoken out against it, says she's basically detached from the family because of this insane political extremism that they're engaged in. She says they're like, they are unhinged, dangerous people. Now, a couple things. I will say, before I talk about the deranged media coverage of this, because that is the primary problem. So I'll give credit to the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, because they did confirm that those three individuals, all members of the same family, were arrested. Because one of them, the girl, also assaulted a deputy when they were trying to question her. A fourth individual was also arrested for obstruction with force against a deputy. So they say that they're referring charges against these individuals, which I will say is the exception, not the rule. I ranted about this on the show last week. There, in terms of violence against me at, you know, a riot, or against many of my friends who do this sort of thing much more often than I do across the country, hardly ever any sort of arrest. Nobody's been arrested in connection with what happened to me at the Tequila facility. I mean, nobody's been arrested, to the best of my knowledge, in connection to the many assaults Katie Davis Court went through. The only arrest I can remember is the guy who was arrested for attacking Cam Higbee. And that's because everybody raised holy hell on social media, named and shamed the guy, and I think they had no choice but to go out and arrest that guy. And so I just have called on the federal government to intervene in some way, because there's hardly any consequences. And that's how you get stuff like the assassination of Charlie Kirk, is because these left-wing extremists, they've been allowed to get away with stuff. Assassination is just the next step that they justify. And then there's the media. Because if the media covered this stuff honestly, if the media covered this stuff like they would if it were Trump supporters attacking a member of the mainstream news, this stuff wouldn't happen anymore, because the police would do something about it. But the media covers stuff like this. Listen to this CBS News article. So it says, FBI investigating alleged assault of conservative journalist during anti-ICE protest in Minneapolis. Alleged assault. And it says, Turning Point USA contributor Savannah Hernandez claimed she was, quote, brutally assaulted by multiple people. They put it in quotes and they say claimed and alleged. Do you have eyes? Are all of your reporters at CBS Minneapolis blind and deaf? You don't have to say it's alleged when it happens on camera. The video that's out there shows her. It starts with her simply standing at a fence, pointing her camera not at the rioters, but in front of her at what's happening in the ICE facility. And that's when they're hitting her in the face with sex toys, screaming. And honestly, it should be a crime to try to deafen someone in the way that's one of their key tactics. And that can absolutely deafen someone. That in and of itself should be a crime. She was doing nothing. And that's how the media covers it. And the other headlines calling her right wing and all this stuff, justifying what happened against her by labeling her in a way that will vilify her. The media wouldn't. Can you imagine if there were hordes of right-wing rioters on a weekly basis across the country seeking out and assaulting legacy news reporters who were just trying to do their job constitutionally protected in the United States of America? Can you imagine how the media would cover it then? But in this, it's alleged, it's downplayed, she's vilified. It is so unacceptable. It's one of the reasons I have such a disdain for the state of legacy news. It's one of the reasons I left that profession and went out on my own. And another bit of good news from this, though, and it's why I question whether this could be potentially a turning point, changing how these cases are dealt with. Because remember, Antifa is a terror organization. Although I'm not sure that I agree necessarily with, just because you might wear something with an Antifa logo, now all of a sudden you're a terrorist. I think it has to be based on actions. But Harmeet Dhillon with the Department of Justice, she reposted someone who was saying the FBI has opened a federal criminal investigation into the assault on Savannah Hernandez. She said, correct. So the U.S. Attorney's Office says that it is going to look into this. And honestly, I think that there are two elements of what happened to Savannah that would be good angles for the federal government to get involved in. So I think Savannah's Hispanic. I mean, the name, and, you know, I've never asked her, I guess, but I assume she is. So you've got these individuals who are shouting at her, the mom, what race are you? What race are you? And then also hitting her with sex toys, which I feel like is like a sexual, that's disgusting. And they were trying to like put them in her face, towards her mouth. I mean, that's deranged. Definitely sexual motivation. It's so sick. But the racial element of it, and then what she's doing is protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. So I feel like there ought to be something the federal government could do, because, again, local jurisdictions, and what are the chances that in Hennepin County, Minnesota, given what's happening there, that you'd find a jury willing to convict these individuals? You know, Nick Sorter, who there was an individual actually arrested in Portland for attacking him, on video, ample evidence, a jury in Portland acquitted the crazy left-wing wild Antifa chick. So I think the federal government has to step in and has to take these cases, even if Hennepin County does file charges, does prosecute, gets convictions. There's got to be something federally that can be done. And nothing's going to change until the media actually covers these things sincerely and as if they would, how they would cover them if it happened to them. Because they're not doing that right now. I mean, look at their coverage of what happened to me. Absolutely deranged and insane. All right, we'll get to national news, what happened with Eric Swalwell coming up next. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Are you worried about the risk associated with it? AI, tech, crypto. Bulwark Capital has a full schedule. They do all of these, like, what are they doing? Like four times a year or something? They end up doing these webinars, live webinars. And so the next one we'll let you know about, and you can absolutely make sure that you sign up for that. But one of the other things you can do in the meantime is you can schedule your own free Know Your Risk portfolio review. So they'll go through the fundamentals of value investing. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management. Always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com, and sign up for just really what is a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Nicole, you're very distracted right now.
Well, sorry. We have a studio guest and she was doing what she's not supposed to be doing over there. So I was trying to get your attention and have you smack her a little.
So Lucky's here. Because my dog's been in and out of the vet. She was at the vet for a full week, just got out yesterday, and I can't take my eyes off of her.
And she went behind you and started licking.
Oh, you got to have some signal, because all I see is you looking at her and stuff.
I was doing this under the thing, trying to get her.
Oh, I could have kicked her. So she's here. She's being pretty good, but she's not supposed to be licking her leg. Luckily, she has a lick sleeve on. But I've got to have her here all week so I can keep a watchful eye. We'll have to have a signal for licking. Okay. Maybe just go...
Okay, deal.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Sure. Hi, Lucky. You're looking real cute right now. People can't see you, but thank you for being quiet. We love you. We appreciate you. We got four more days so she can get her stitches out and maybe we can move on with this nightmare. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, the news. My job. Got it. The Eric Swalwell thing in California is crazy. So he suspended his campaign for governor of California over the weekend. He said, to my family, staff, friends, and supporters, I am deeply sorry for mistakes and judgment I've made in my past. I will fight the serious false allegations that have been made, but that's my fight, not a campaign. So what happened? So over the weekend, an article came out in the San Francisco Chronicle. The headline, ex-staffer says Eric Swalwell, candidate for California governor, sexually assaulted her. And it details this woman's story. And I think, you know, there's also one of the things that's really gotten to me about this whole ordeal is, and I will say her depiction is very detailed. And they also included some text messages she'd sent to friends at the time about what she says happened to her, which I think adds a lot of validity to it, because it's not just something that she's making up sort of in the moment. It's something that she talked to friends about when it happened, right? But one of the things that's fascinating about this is all of a sudden, this was like story, 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 story. CNN had something out. Former staffer alleges in CNN interview that Rep. Eric Swalwell raped her. They also talked to other individuals who said, you know, inappropriate conduct and actions by Eric Swalwell, et cetera. And so all these stories that clearly people have been working on behind the scenes at kind of the same time, they end up coming out orchestrated. Now, I think it's true. But one of the things that happened is all these individuals came out and said, like in the Democratic sort of circles, they came out and they said that, oh, people have known about this for years, that he's like a creep.
And there have been all these accusations from interns and staffers. And there were even some California-based journalists who said that these have floated around for years. Okay. So why is it just coming out now? Eric Swalwell, didn't he run for president in 2020? Mm-hmm. So don't you think when he's running for president that that would be the time that some of this would come out? And so to me, I think Democrats saw that the field was so packed, and the way that it was set up is there was a possibility that Republicans would be able to edge out Democrats, and they like had to sacrifice someone. So they'd already had dirt. I mean, they're ruthless, ruthless in how this happens. So now there are bipartisan calls for him not only obviously to have dropped out of the governor's race, but to resign from Congress as well. Here's Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of our state.
I am sick and tired of watching powerful men in powerful positions be able to get away with sexually abusing and assaulting women. And in the case of both Tony Gonzalez and Eric Swalwell, the very serious allegations are about staffers, young staffers who work for these members of Congress who have been violently assaulted. In the case of Tony Gonzalez, he has admitted to what happened with his staffer, to having an inappropriate sexual relationship with that staffer. This is part of the reason that the American people don't trust us, because we continue to allow these people to serve. And it sends a message in the case of Representative Gonzalez and Swalwell that staffers across the Capitol are wondering what is potentially going to happen to them if they're in this situation.
Yeah, and one of the things I appreciate is there are bipartisan calls for both to resign from Congress. Rep. Tony Gonzalez, he's that guy who, like his former staffer, didn't she light herself on fire and killed herself? I mean, it's really horrible stuff. And he had been, like, exchanging these sexually explicit messages with her. I think she wanted him to leave her his wife or something. And it was this whole sort of, and Republicans have been calling for him to be ousted from Congress. And so now, but what's interesting is the calls from Democrats for Eric Swalwell to drop out of the governor's race were much more widespread than the calls for him to leave Congress. And they're like, wait a second, if what he did is bad enough for him to not to run for governor, don't you think every Democrat calling for him to drop out of the governor's race would also call for him to leave Congress? Unless this is, of course, all just political maneuvering to make sure a Democrat wins the race for governor in California. But to me, one of the biggest takeaways, you look at that guy, you know he's creepy. I'm sorry, but you look at that guy, you know he's creepy. And he can't deny this stuff. I mean, because there's a video out now of him and other, like another man on a bed next to him, clearly a hotel room, and they're like fondling this woman. She's clearly like kind of trying to sort of not resist, but like turn away. Mm-hmm. And people are saying she's a sex worker. So no doubt he's cheated on his wife, right? And he's basically acknowledging that part of it. But he says the things that could lead to criminal charges, like sexual assault, he's saying, I absolutely didn't do that stuff. But if he's not fit to run for governor, he's not fit to be in Congress. And I feel the same way about Texas Representative Tony Gonzalez as well. Like, get them out of there. You have to have higher standards. So there's a little part of me that's happy that we're seeing bipartisan calls to sort of purge some of the known sex predators from Congress. We can have a little bit of standards there. But I don't know what's going to happen in California now. I mean, Katie Porter, she's not accused, I guess, of breaking any laws unless you count her pouring scalding hot mashed potatoes on her husband's head. She, you know, is known for berating staffers and stuff. So I think she's probably not going to be able to win as well. But I think they were trying to thin the herd to make sure that Democrat won.
His poor kids. I just, ugh.
I know. His poor kids human. And his poor wife. Oh, I mean, that, absolutely
that
insane.
That too, but man, yeah. Why are you running for such a public position when you have so many ghosts in your past?
Well, that's the thing is, how would you think understand. That wouldn't come out?
Right.
And again, like this person's openly recording him in a hotel room. Somebody's recording him with what is alleged to be a hooker. And I think he looked like he was just absolutely blackout drunk or something like that. But wild. Again, I don't have a lot of ghosts in my closet.
The egos, man.
Yeah, the egos are pretty disgusting, but I'm just glad I don't have to hear him talk anymore because he is insufferable on the news. Absolutely insufferable.
Your ghosts are not ghosts.
Well, right? I talk about all of it. There's literally nothing that has happened in my life that I have not discussed or alluded to on this show. So they can dig deep. They'll have to falsify things if I ever run for office. They'll have to come out and lie. All right, we'll get to Trump versus the Pope. Donald, why? coming up in our closing sanity check in a moment. We'll also get to our subscriber poll comments. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, make sure that you sign up to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They are Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. And there's a lot of things, I think a lot of benefits to becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They can help you on a one-on-one basis with screening, forms, all of that, everything that you need. Make sure you're up to date with all the new laws and regulations. And also, they have educational events across the state on housing policy, which I think are good for anyone who's interested in housing politics and housing policy in the state of Washington. So sign up to become a member of the RHA today. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Okay, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. I was trying to tell you, I don't see comments in there yet. Miranda, give me some comments in the show sheet before I get to that point in the show. But first, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about this concept of, do we have a duty, essentially, to defy in some way unconstitutional laws? And I know sometimes that means putting ourselves out there, you know, potentially getting raided by the Attorney General's office over my little hard drives there. So I asked you, do you believe you have a duty to defy unconstitutional laws, or should those fights be left up to the courts? Nicole, what do you say?
I haven't really thought about this. You have a duty to defy unconstitutional laws. I don't know about duty, but I guess push back against it. But I feel like that's kind of what we do, right? Is call it out and push back against it without actually breaking the law.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's different ways to do
that, $30
right?
tabs thing.
Yes.
I don't know. You can find a way around it. A duty to defy it. Or, you know, kind of work the system.
Yeah, work the system. Yeah, and that's a good example of it. Like, you're not hurting anyone. And I would never call for someone. I don't believe in political violence, right? I'm not saying there haven't been times in history like the founding of this country where political violence was the only option. But remember, the monarchy shot first. You know, it wasn't like this proactive thing. But I think there are ways that we can defy, whether it's with our words of protest or, like I said, you know, finding ways around it. Let's see what you guys had to say. I was very curious because over on Locals, which tends to be a little bit more conservative of a subscriber base, 70% of you said, leave that up to the courts. Diana Mo says, as a person of faith, I believe I have to follow the laws of the land I reside in, so long as those laws do not conflict with God's commandments as laid out in the Bible, which supersede man's laws. Ump03 says, I guess I don't understand how a governor and the legislature can break laws to suit their needs, but I have to follow the law. Mr. Ferguson signed an unconstitutional law. How does that represent the people? Where is the outrage? I'm at a loss for words that Democrats are not held accountable for their behavior, and it shows. But that's the thing is, when you really have one party control over all these checks and balances, mm-hmm. one party control of the legislative branch, one party control of the executive branch for what, 45 years now? And then the executive branch appoints people to the judicial branch, which it's easier for them to keep their seats. And so you really have a bunch of Democratic political appointees on what is supposed to be the ultimate check and balance for power. A little more even on Patreon, about 50-50, duty for defiance versus go through the courts. Robert says, why not both? But I must confess, I do have a bit of contrarian in me. Jackie says, ultimately both, but defiance would require the majority of individuals to take it upon themselves to defy together before it would impact anything. So until then, we have to depend on the courts, which stinks. Yeah. And courts, like Brian points out, courts used to be the avenue, and you used to have a little more reliability and belief that if something was clearly unconstitutional, that it wouldn't be able to withstand a constitutional challenge. But here we are, racing toward the potential that the state's high court will find a blatantly unconstitutional law constitutional. Okay, we'll get to some comments on Washington building its own IRS. Haynes says, going back to biblical times of the hated tax collector. I feel bad. I talked to a lady at the IRS once. I needed some document for something. I can't recall what it was. She was so nice. And I made it a point to be extra friendly to her because I'm sure none of the calls she gets are friendly.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that and the post office.
Yeah.
Poor people.
I know.
Just trying to work.
Just be nice. Matt says, these guys watched Robin Hood and thought Prince John was the good guy. Yeah. I don't give a chuck. So all the tax money collected will just be used to pay to collect the tax money. A lot of it. A lot of it. Yep.
Sure seems like it.
On my question, should we defy unconstitutional laws? Oh, we got a lot of... Oh, interesting. They've started a bail fund for me? Yes. Okay, well, they'd have to prove that I intend to use these blueprints to print a gun or give it to someone who plans to print a gun. And is that my intention? It's not the governor's. It's not the government's business. Moon Goddess, bail money for Brandy. Robert covered Nicole. They gave you more bail money than me?
Apparently.
Wow. What? I mean, I'd bail her out. Let's see. I got a couple here. Brandy bail fund. Oh, that's nice. Undivided bail fund, assuming Nicole will need it too for conspiracy to commit. Yes. Just, she's here. She's aware. Yep. Sharon Barber, when government fears the people, there is liberty. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny. Great quote. Son Miller, they'll do nothing because it's all optics. Dan Harder, of course they don't intend to arrest everyone, only those that are visible and pose a threat to their power. Well, I'm visible. I don't know if I pose a threat to their power, but they probably don't like me very much, and I'm giving them an opportunity to come arrest me. Now's your chance, Nick Brown. Now's your chance. On homelessness, just getting worse in Katie's Seattle. Patty, Einstein's theory of insanity keeps doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Right. So obvious. Looking up for Jesus, we all need to make damn sure the world sees the real Seattle. I feel that way, too. I don't want anybody to get hurt here during the World Cup. There's certainly more dangerous places on Earth that the World Cup has been hosted. But I think people need to see Seattle for what it is.
It's quite obviously suffering. So I get their whole, you know, let people do drugs if they want to do drugs.
Yeah.
But these people are suffering. I mean, the guy with the face that had been burned.
I know. That's sad.
People with their... feet being like, I mean, just eaten alive by drugs. Like it's crazy. And to support it or not try to help people at all and just to hide them in tiny houses is not.
It's cruelty.
It's cruelty. It's cruelty. And I don't understand their mentality on this at all.
Opposite
at
of empathy. All. On the attack on Sav in Minneapolis, Daryl Thomas, the guy that pushed her needs jail. Oh, 100%. The rage in his eyes. They all had the same eyes. Those three family members. The crazy eyes. Creepy. You know what I mean? I was just, oh my gosh, in a rage. Let's see. Kirk, you need to wear a Siberian bear hunter suit. They will not touch you then. What does that mean? Siberian bear hunter suit. I don't know. Is that an inside thing? Or if they think you're a Siberian bear hunter, they won't do anything to you? Weiss Castle, huge man assaulting a small woman should be headline news regardless of whether it's a journalist or not. I agree. What?
They have spikes all over them. Oh. Siberian bear hunter suits have spikes all over them.
That's funny. On Swalwell ending his gubernatorial bid, Suzanne, there were too many Dems in that race. They needed to push someone out. Yeah, they couldn't quite push. I think they tried to do the same thing to Katie Porter, shame her into dropping out with all this stuff coming out and the videos being leaked of how she treated her staff and all of that. And she just didn't have any shame, so she didn't drop
no
out.
No shame
at
all.
So then they
all.
Started to work on Eric Swalwell.
And her commenting on how he treats his staffers.
I know. What? I was like... Come again?
Maybe just sit this one out, Katie.
Sit this one out. You abused my favorite food. You used my favorite, second favorite food to abuse your husband. First it's taco salad, then it's mashed potatoes.
Oh, I thought mashed potatoes was number one, actually.
No, a taco salad in recent years has really, I'll always say yes to a good taco salad. Oh my gosh. There's this place in Ephrata called DK's Drive-In.
Oh, yeah.
And Mike and I, whenever we're over there, we always stop at DK's and we get their version of a blizzard, which I think is called like a hurricane or something. Delicious. Mm-hmm. They're not stingy with the sugary treats. But then they have a taco salad that is to die for. Oh. I want to send, can I get an Uber Eats from Ephrata to my house with one of those taco salads?
Speaking of Uber Eats, did you see Trump did that at the White House today?
Yes, he Uber he Uber ate.
Grubhub or something like that.
He Uber-eated
McDonald's.
Yeah. It was funny. And then the lady who's
DoorDash.
Like...
DoorDash. That's what he did.
Yeah, DoorDash. And she's like the DoorDash grandma. Obviously, they had to, you know, orchestrate that because you can't just walk in and knock on the door of the West Wing. But she's like an older lady. And then he's standing there with the delivery, bag. Which is McDonald's. And the media starts asking about Iran. And DoorDash grandma's just standing there while the president asks his questions on Iran. I was like, that is so cute. Haynes said, we need a lucky cam. Yeah, if we had a lucky cam, I would have known what you were looking at.
I know. And, I'm sorry. I was trying not to be too distracting, but trying to get her attention.
Well, she has a lick sleeve and a big old cone. But I was like, I can't put the cone on her during the show because she'll be crashing into things and acting a fool. But she's sleeping now, so she's good.
Yeah, she's good.
So, yeah. Okay, we'll get to Trump versus the Pope coming up next. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing are a great team to call if you've got a little bit of work to do on the exterior of your home as we enter spring. And certainly with all the rain, I think that's a good time to really evaluate if you've got any weak spots in your roof and if maybe you need some new gutters. They're not working their best or they're clogged and overflowing, because Valentine also offers those gutter guards, and they can help keep leaves out, needles out for good. Just gives you an extra additional layer of defense against clogged and overflowing gutters. And in the month of April, they're offering a deal where you can get 10% off a bundle, which I think is pretty cool. So if you get a new roof with Valentine, and then you bundle it with new gutters, which I think makes sense if you're replacing your roof, get new gutters, right? They'll give you 10% off your entire project, which is great. So reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, to schedule your free estimate. Ask them about that 10% off bundle. And of course, tell them you heard about them. That's the first thing you should say. Hello, I heard about you on Undivided with Brandi Cruz, and I would like an estimate. They also do exterior cleaning as well, which is something that I think if you're heading into summer months, it's always nice to have clean windows and outside of your home to have company over on the deck or whatever you do. Okay, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Man, Trump v. the Pope is not the battle I thought would be fought today. So Pope Leo said he disagreed with the ongoing military action in Iran. So President Trump responded, as he often does when anybody criticizes him. He called Pope Leo weak on crime and horrible on foreign policy and accused him of hurting the Catholic Church. I'm not going to. He also said he likes Pope Leo's brother more than he likes him. Really just.
Oh, because I think his brother is MAGA.
Yeah, I'm not going to read that whole thing. Thank you, but that's too long. And then he was asked about it by the press.
I don't think he's doing a very good job. He likes crime, I guess. He hit us. Think of it. He's worried about fear. What about the fear when the ministers and the priests and all of those great people that were arrested during COVID, and in many cases, they're outside 10 feet apart, and they were arrested. So we don't like it. We don't like a pope that's going to say that it's okay to have a nuclear weapon. We don't want a pope that says crime is okay in our cities. I don't like it. I'm not a big fan of Pope Leo. He's a very liberal person, and he's a man that doesn't believe in stopping crime. He's a man that doesn't think that we should be toying with a country that wants a nuclear weapons so they can blow up the world. I'm not a fan of Pope Leo.
Well, Pope Leo responded. Here's that.
I have no fear, neither the Trump administration nor speaking out loudly about the message of the gospel. And that's what I believe. I am called to do what the church is called to do. We're not politicians. We're not looking to make foreign policy, as he calls it, with the same perspective that he might understand it. But I do believe that the message of the gospel, blessed are the peacemakers, is the message that the world needs to hear today.
And we're not done quite yet. President Trump also being called out by a lot of conservatives for this AI-generated image of him as Jesus, I think, healing a sick man, which is what it seems. There's an American flag. There's some bald eagles. There's a sick man who looks an awful lot like former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. And then there's President Trump with a light in his hand, touching his forehead, healing them, dressed again, what appears to be like Jesus Christ. He got a lot of feedback and criticism from conservatives and fans of the president, who called it blasphemous. So he did remove it this morning, and he said that he just watch.
I did post it, and I thought it was me as a doctor and had to do with Red Cross as a Red Cross worker there, which we support.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Only the fake news could come up with that one. So I just heard about it, and I said, how did they come up with that? It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better. And I do make people better. I make people a lot better.
That's Dr. Trump right there.
There he is. You know, most doctors who heal me dress like that. Yes,
yeah.
For sure. A little glow and aura around them.
Right,
and
forget the white coat.
Emitting from their hands.
You know what? Maybe they should dress like that.
Yeah.
So that when, you know, I don't know. I guess let everybody.
Sometimes you just take the L, Donald. Sometimes just take the L. And you know what? Just because you can make it with AI doesn't mean you should. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you for your patience as we monitor my dog all week long here on Undivided, and very likely have some more interruptions as I yell at her or pet her or try to calm her down. She was pretty good today, though.
Good, good.
She was, you don't think so?
I think she's pretty good. Very good girl.
Calm, all those things. Anyway, if you'd like to support our show, it's just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Thank you guys for being willing to bail me out if I get arrested, by the way. I do appreciate the sentiment behind that. And the good news is, if you watched our Sunday show, they're about to change the rules for bail, which means I can bail out for virtually nothing. Virtually nothing. That's it. I'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.